say, okay, what do I need to do in these areas? What do I need to do in life insurance and in health insurance and in disability insurance?
I'm going to get some term life insurance. I'm single, but you know, there's still things that need to be taken care of if something ever happens to me.
Most people don't understand the concepts behind the time value of money principle that insurance is based upon. And that's where insurance companies get rich.
We see people who file bankruptcy because they have a significant medical problem and inadequate insurance to provide for that.
I know that at one time when I first left the military, I was unable to get insurance, like life insurance and stuff. And now I can, but it's a matter of where do I get it and who do I go to and how much is the right amount.
I was sold an insurance product that was really not a good deal at all.
Picked up two that I'm not supposed to have, according to Dave, so now I will go home Monday, cancel those, and reinvest my money, and I'm going to be ahead.
Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome nationally syndicated radio host and best-selling author, Dave Ramsey.
I got to tell you, this is a tough lesson right here. This is a tough lesson because there's absolutely nothing entertaining or exciting about it. And I'm supposed to make it entertaining, exciting, and maybe even funny. Go figure that. But this is a lesson that will absolutely steal your financial peace. If you don't understand insurance, you're going to have a problem because insurance has all kinds of holes in it, all kinds of things you can get your foot stuck in, all types of traps that have been set for you out there. You can get absolutely in a mess with insurance. You can make a mess that is unbelievable. You can hurt your finances. And you can wake up 20, 25, 30 years later with some of these types of insurance. And only then do you find out they're a problem. So what we're going to try to do in this session is we're going to spring the trap. There we go. Scary stuff. I was scared I was going to step in that thing. Whew, that would have been bad. So what we're going to do is literally do something that doesn't, well, that it's almost an oxymoron in our culture. We're going to understand insurance. So look at that page and let's begin to fill in the workbook as we go along. The purpose of insurance is to transfer risk. Now, insurance is good. Insurance is a financial planning tool. But how many of us could say we hate insurance? We all have this nagging feeling down inside that somehow there's something wrong. Well, there is something wrong. Absolutely. Many of these types of insurance and the way we buy them absolutely are ripping us off. So I'm going to teach you because I don't sell insurance, although I have been licensed to sell almost every kind of it at one time or another. I've dropped all the licenses, and that way I can say whatever I want. I'm not regulated. So I can tell you the truth now because I don't care. It doesn't matter. I'm just a teacher. And what this lesson ends up doing is making some insurance people mad. And you know the other thing that's interesting is? I get letters from former insurance people. After they watched this lesson, they couldn't keep doing it the way they were doing it because they understood it for the first time and they had been selling it for years. Isn't that amazing? I'm a consumer advocate. I don't have an axe to grind. I don't care what you do. I'm here to teach you, and then whether you take that knowledge and do something with it is a whole nother thing. Insurance is necessary because until you have big, big cash, certain losses can bankrupt you. So wisdom says you need to transfer that risk. You need to take that risk and move it onto someone else. If you have a loss in one of these major areas, and these are the basic coverages that we're going to talk about, they're the types that you do need, and we're also going to talk about the types of insurance that you don't need, some of the gimmick plans that are out there that absolutely are not necessary, and many of us have owned them or do own them already. Now let's look at the basic types. Homeowners and renters insurance, we all know about that. Auto insurance, health insurance, disability insurance, life insurance, of course, and number six is long-term care insurance. So homeowners or renters, auto, health, disability, life, and long-term care. First, let's look at homeowners and auto insurance. How can we save money? What are the do's and don'ts? What are the things that are smart to do there? What are the processes there where you can get ripped off? Number one, if you have your emergency fund, a fully funded emergency fund, baby step three is how much? 3 to 6 months of expenses. Good, you're starting to get it. In that case, you raise your deductible. How many of you carry a $500 or below deductible? Raise your deductible. You need to look at a $1,000 deductible in most cases. If you raise your deductible on your auto and your homeowners, it of course does what to the premiums? Lowers the premiums. Now let me teach you for a second how to decide if raising the deductible makes sense with your particular company or when you're looking at competitive bids with other companies. Here's what will make sense. Take the difference, the extra risk that you're getting ready to take. Let's say you're going from a $250 deductible to a $1,000 deductible. The difference would be how much? $750, okay? And that might be on your auto insurance as an example. Okay, so you are going to take $750 extra risk. Now, if that saves you $30 a year, it will take you 25 years without having a wreck to break even, right? I took the $750, I divided it by the annual savings. It tells me how many years I've got to go without the event occurring, without the auto insurance, a wreck happening, right? But if I save $250 a year, how many years have I got to go without having a wreck with a $750 change? 3 years, right? Well, depending on how you drive, that might be a pretty good bet, right? And depending on where you live, some towns you just can't drive in, you know? But the situation is that you got to kind of think through it that way. Do a little break-even analysis. That's what it's called. How much extra risk are you taking, and are you getting enough savings and premium in order to justify incurring that risk? That makes sense, doesn't it? Say yes. Good. All right. Now, carry adequate liability. Liability on your car and on your homeowners is some of the best buys in the insurance business. It doesn't cost much, and everyone tries to cheat on that side. And that means you ought to carry $500,000 minimum. It's very inexpensive. Liability is not the problem in your car insurance or your homeowner's insurance. That liability coverage is a very inexpensive part of it. And you'll see it paired up with your property side, and it'll say something like $150,200 or $150,300 or $250,500 or $50,100. You've heard those kinds of figures, okay? What you're looking at there is the high one. That's the main liability thing. And you want that one to be at least $500,000 because it's very inexpensive, the difference between $250,000 and $500,000 worth of liability. And no one in a major car accident sues for $250,000, do they? You don't want to become bankrupt. We want to transfer the risk here. So liability is a good buy. Sometimes, I haven't chosen to do this, I'll tell you up front, but sometimes on an old car, it makes sense to drop the collision. Now, collision means if you tear the car up and it's your fault, then you have to pay for the car if you don't have collision insurance. If you have collision on your auto, then they pay for your car. But if you're driving a $2,000 car and collision costs $500 a month, then this isn't going to make much sense, is it? Okay? So again, you've kind of got to do a break-even analysis. But before you drop the collision, make really, really sure you have lots of cash to buy yourself a new car if something happens. If you don't have the cash to buy yourself a new car, then you keep the collision. And of course, if you have debt on it, you keep the collision, because that tells me you don't have the money to buy yourself a new car, right? And besides that, the lender will require that you keep that collision on to protect their collateral. So in some rare instances, dropping the collision may be a good idea. Now, in our case, we have the money to buy replacement cars, but we're driving pretty nice cars these days. Used, yes, but pretty nice cars. And so the collision seems to be a pretty good buy even in that situation. And so we have chosen to keep the collision. So it's something to look at and consider. Now, here's a big deal right here. Check your homeowner's policy. If you own a home, make sure you have replacement cost insurance. A lot of the major insurance companies in the past several years have done away with guaranteed replacement cost insurance. Instead, what they have issued to you, and that was a little subtle change that came in the mail, and I want you to check because most of the majors have changed this, and there's just a few of them still doing the real replacement cost. Here's the problem. Replacement cost on your homeowners says if your home burns, they replace your home. Period. No matter what the coverage is, no matter what the amounts were, they guarantee to replace your home. Well, what was happening was the insurance companies were not coming back, and the consumer certainly wasn't coming back, and raising those coverages and raising those premiums thereby, but they still had coverage if something happened. And so what they've done now, many of these companies have put a dollar amount on there and said, you have your coverage plus a maximum of 25%. So let's give an example. Let's say you bought a $100,000 home and you got $100,000 worth of coverage that was not guaranteed replacement coverage. And you go along a couple of years and that house is worth $175,000. 5, 10 years later, whatever the number is, and you never changed it, you only have $125,000 worth of coverage. 100 plus a 25 bonus pack, okay, a 25% bonus pack. And if they don't come back and change it and you don't come back and change it and it burns, you're $50,000 in the hole. So never buy anything but replacement cost insurance. My college roommate works for a nationally known good company. They changed and did away with replacement cost insurance, and after 15 years of having insurance with him, I dropped my insurance and went to a different insurance carrier over this issue. I will not have my home that is paid for not covered by anything except replacement cost. I don't want to play their 25% games. I don't want to keep up with it. I worked too hard to get it paid for. It's their problem. I wanted to transfer the risk. That was the idea, remember? So be careful with these guys. That's a big deal in the homeowner's world right now. Number five is an umbrella policy, which is a big liability policy that is an umbrella over the top of your car and homeowners. So if you had a $500,000 policy on your car and on your homeowners, for a couple of $100 a year in most states, you can buy another $2 million worth of liability. If someone falls against your car walking out of your house and the homeowners and the auto kicks in, they've got up to $2 million worth of coverage there. And you want an umbrella policy big time when you start to put together some assets. Let's say you've got some assets, you've got some stuff that you've gathered up. You're starting to get financial peace and you've got $200,000 or $300,000 worth of stuff. Be sure in that case that you've gotten an umbrella policy. They're only a couple of $100 a year, and it's one of the best buys, again, in the insurance world, is to get the liability covered, because once you start getting some assets in our culture that is so lawsuit happy, you become a target. And the best way to not be a target is to keep some big, fat, ugly insurance company between you and the problem. And believe me, for a couple of $100 a year, I keep a nice liability umbrella on me and over at the business as well. So you want to be sure to do that. Health insurance. Keys to saving on your health insurance, of course, is to increase your deductible. Now, how many of you do not have health insurance furnished at work? You have to buy it in some way on your own. Right now, it looks like it's about a third of Americans, and that's what it looks like in here, too, roughly. As those of you know, like I have found, because I'm out here in the real world, self-employed, that can be very, very expensive. But let me tell you, health insurance is something you have got to do. Medical bills are the number one or number two cause of personal bankruptcy, depending on which set of statistics you read. Number one or number two, depending again, is credit cards. So credit cards and medical problems without health insurance and without an emergency fund are what bring the average consumer into bankruptcy. Get health insurance. Well, Dave, I can't afford it. You can if you do a few of these tricks. Again, raise the deductible. Raise the deductible. That will save you on your premiums. Now, how many of you know that there's an 80-20 in a major medical policy? Have you ever heard that? 80-20? That means they pay 80% and we pay? Right. That's called the copay amount. Now, some policies out in the open market, when you're buying your own individual insurance, will allow you not only to increase your deductible, but to increase the copay amount. So, in other words, instead of doing 80-20, you could do 70-30. Now, I have taken more risk if I have the opportunity to pay 30% instead of 20%, correct? Okay, if I'm taking more risk, then guess what my premiums do? They go down, okay? So if I raise my deductible and raise my copay, again, I better have my emergency fund ready, hadn't I? I better have that ready cash in case something happens, but then that's a way to keep my premiums down and be able to get health insurance in a world where health insurance is getting unbelievably expensive. The other thing you can do is you can increase your stop loss. Now, what a stop loss is, most policies will have a $5,000 or a $10,000 or something like that stop loss. in an individual health policy. Now, some of you in your group plans could have one as low as $2,000 or $3,000. Stop loss means that with the deductible and with the copay, my maximum out-of-pocket is $10,000. After that, they don't pay 80-20 or 70-30 anymore. They pay 100%. So I have a stop loss. It stops my loss. Again, if I have a $10,000 cash emergency fund, it would be pretty easy to carry a $1,000 or a $2,000 deductible with a 70-30 and a $10,000 maximum out-of-pocket stop loss, wouldn't it? So you see what I'm doing. Again, I'm transferring some of that early risk to me, the consumer, but what that does is keep my premiums down where they're very, very affordable and where health insurance actually starts to be a decent buy. Does that make sense? Say yes. Good. Okay. Now, how many of you are self-employed or have any self-employed income of any kind anywhere in your household? Good. Good. Then you need to look at these medical savings accounts, the MSA. This is nicknamed the medical IRA. You have to have self-employed income to be able to use these. Now, the MSA is a powerful little mechanism. It's basically a major medical insurance policy with a tax-deductible savings account attached, and it works with a large deductible. Let me kind of walk you through how it works. We had one for several years until our company got large enough that the group insurance started to make sense. Now, the MSA works like this. With a family of five, in my late 30s, early 40s, I had medical health insurance, regular 80-20 health insurance with a $1,000 deductible. It was $450 a month in my state in those days. Okay? Now, what I found with the MSA was I could take out an 80-20 copay with a $4,500 deductible, a big deductible. Can you do that if you have a $15,000 emergency fund? Can you or not?
Yes.
Okay, good. And not have to worry about it, right? So I took out a $4,500 deductible with an MSA plan. Standard health insurance, big deductible. What that did was it dropped my premiums from $450 to $150. Saving me how much? A month. $300 a month. $3,600 a year, right? Now, with the MSA, you are allowed to save tax deductible, I like that part, 75% of your deductible into a major medical, or into a medical savings account every year. 75% of $4,500 is $3,375. So for several years, we stuck a tax deductible, like an old IRA was, okay, a tax deductible pre-tax, $3,375, into a medical savings account. It grows without paying taxes on it, kind of like an IRA would, right? Unless you need it. If you want it for medical bills of any kind, that could include braces, that could include laser eye surgery, that could include buying a Tylenol, you can take that money out of there and spend it on medical with no penalties and no taxes. So you had tax-free medical care up through that. So the government, in a sense, because it's tax-free, is subsidizing or helping you run a good medical plan. Now, I'll tell you what happened with us. It made us become very, very wise consumers because we were paying everything out of our pocket, in a sense. Because if we didn't have to pay it out, we got to keep that money, right? Now, think this through with me. If I do $450 a month, that's over $5,000 a year going out in premiums, right? If I don't have $5,000 a year in medical expenses, who makes a profit? The insurance company, right? Is this hard? Okay. Now, if I have, instead of $150 premium, that's $1,800 a year, and I don't have $5,000 in medical expenses, but I'm still putting away almost $300 more a month in that savings account. So I'm still putting out almost $450 a month, but the difference is if I don't have a bunch of medical bills, I keep the profit because it's in a savings account. So for healthy people, healthy families that are self-employed and are not going to run through that money every year, you're going to profit with your healthy situation and have a great tax deduction and have low insurance premiums in the process with the medical savings account. It is a fabulous plan. My hope and prayer is that it'll become available with law to everyone, because I'll tell you what'll happen. You start watching what the doc charges when you start paying for it. You start watching what the hospital does when you start paying for it. And what it'll do is it'll put the consumer on the healthcare industry's trail, and it'll straighten up some of this overcharging stuff that no amount of laws or government intervention will ever do. So the MSA is the answer to a bunch of the healthcare woes across America, in my opinion. I don't have one today. I've got group insurance now. But if they ever make that group situation where I can do it with an MSA, I'll convert it to that in a heartbeat because it puts the responsibility back on me, and I'm okay with having responsibility for my life. What an idea. Okay, disability insurance. Top of the next page. Disability insurance is probably the most underinsured area in North America. Every one of you need to look into disability insurance immediately. You need to go home and check what you've got. If you don't have it, you need to look at this. It is to replace income lost due to short-term or permanent disability. You are 12 times more likely to become disabled than to die by age 65 if you're 32 years old. You need disability insurance. I was doing a book signing the other day in a city right after we had done a big seminar event there, and this young guy came up to me, 28 years old. I had done this diatribe on the radio about how you just had to have disability insurance. It's just a necessity. I was just going off on it one day. Sounds like a real boring idea, doesn't it? Discussing disability insurance. But I tell you what, I see these families who have been completely crushed by a disability. This guy came up to me and he said, "Dave, you have absolutely saved our family's life." He said, "You're looking at a man that makes $60,000 a year right now and is on permanent disability." And he described the disease that he had. I didn't know what it was or how it worked. But basically, he had been declared completely permanently disabled. And the only reason his family was existing, he had $100,000 a year income. He got 60% coverage. And he had $60,000 a year income with this disease at 28 years old. Man, go figure this. Because he had gone and covered this issue. I'm telling you, you've got to look at disability insurance. Most people don't completely overlook life insurance. Most people don't completely overlook health insurance. But most people do overlook disability insurance. You want to buy disability insurance that pays if you cannot perform the job you were educated or trained to do. This is called OONOC, for own occupation, or occupational disability. Now, occupational disability, again, means if you can't do what you're trained to do, then you get paid. Now, our group disability at our place has 2 years of OONOC. Now, what that means is, since I do radio and seminars and public speaking for a living, then if I lost my voice, I would be disabled, wouldn't I? For purposes of doing, in more ways than one, but I'd probably just explode, you know? But the truth is, if I couldn't do my job that I was trained and educated to do, what I do for a living, then by definition of the own occupation, I will get paid for 2 years. After that, I'd have to find a job that I could do without talking and that would put up with me and how frustrated I would be without being able to talk. So you need the reason you need occupational disability is some of you couldn't get an income anywhere near what you have if you couldn't do the very thing that you do now. If you had to change and make a major left or a major right turn, your income would drop substantially, and so OONOC would make a whole bunch of difference there. It's slightly more expensive in a white-collar setting. It's much more expensive in a blue-collar setting and may not make sense there. So if you're like a window washer on high-rises and that kind of thing, just forget it. You're not getting disability or life insurance, okay? They don't want you. They don't like you. Okay, but so, and they are going to, with disability insurance, rate you more on what you do than how old you are. Your job category is more important to them because that's how you become disabled, not based on your age, typically. Where with life insurance, you're more likely to die if you're older, and so they rate you based on your age. As we get into that, we'll look at that very carefully. Beware of buy coverage that's long-term, from age 65 or for life. Beware of short-term policies. Short-term disability doesn't solve your problem. If you have a major issue, you're in a wheelchair, you lose the use of some of your limbs or your eyesight or something like that, that is for life. It's not for 3 years. Short-term doesn't do you much good. Short-term should be covered by the fact that you're out of debt and have a good emergency fund. And besides that, the long-term disability will kick in at some time in the first year after the accident anyway. So your emergency fund would catch you up until that point. Short-term disability is not something I recommend spending money on. I would rather you put that money in savings and in investments to start to cover the self-insured side of things by building wealth. Does that make sense? Say yes. Good. Now, your coverage should be for around 65% of your take-home pay. If you can get that, then you've just about got your income, depending on the tax bracket that you're in. By the time they hit you with Social Insecurity payments, and they hit you with Medicaid, and they hit you with all the other things they take out of your check, you don't get home but with somewhere around 70 to 80% of your income. So living on 65 in a disabled setting is something you could pull off. You're not going to find disability income much over 70%. A lot of categories of jobs as low as 50% is the most you can get. And depending on your income, if you get an upper income, 50% is about all they're going to cover, because they don't want to let a rich guy stay rich off of them. So they want to give you all kinds of incentive to go back out and create some kind of an income. So 65 is a good target, but know that depending on your situation, you might have to settle as low as 50. You might get as high as 70%, especially in a group plan. Now, the elimination period is the deductible in disability. Elimination is the time that's eliminated from the time of disability. They eliminate payments. They do not give you payments until they start. So if you have a 90-day elimination period and it takes you 30 days to get the medical work done to prove your disability, well, from the time of proof, 90 days later, you're going to start getting payments. So a 90-day elimination period is pretty standard. A 30-day elimination period might be like getting a $100 deductible on a car policy. A 90-day might be the equivalent of about a $500 deductible. And if you had 6 months of savings set aside for an emergency fund, you could take a 6-month elimination period, a larger deductible, couldn't you, if you're buying this on your own? And that would do what with your premiums? Make them go down again. So the longer the elimination period, it's like a bigger deductible. The longer the elimination period, the lower your premium cost is going to be. So disability insurance is something you should look into. Now, how many of you have a group policy of some kind furnished at work that's a health insurance plan? Health insurance. Okay. If you do not have disability on you that is furnished as a corporate benefit, they probably offer it for just a few dollars there. Group disability purchased by the employee is about a fourth the cost that the rest of us have to pay for disability out here in the real world. Okay, so where you can buy it through your company, it is a great buy. It's just a few dollars, $10, $11 a month or something like that will cover a whole bunch of you for 50, 60, maybe even 70% of your income. And it's just a matter of you never looked into it and never bothered. You will bother, but it will be too late unless you take my suggestion today. So that is a huge thing. Go into HR. Go into the Human Resources Department. Find out what your coverage is. If you don't have coverage furnished by your company and they allow you to buy it there, I'll just tell you, buy it. You don't even have to go shopping. Buy it, because it's cheaper than you can get out in the open market. Group disability is the best way to go and get disability. A new thing has come on the line in the last several years, and it's becoming more and more popular with financial counselors and financial planners. It's called long-term care insurance. Now, long-term care insurance is for nursing home or in-home care. I recommend long-term care insurance once you're 60 years old or older. Prior to that, I would rather you use those insurance premium dollars to buy investments to be able to furnish your own care potentially. See, you've got $2 or $3 or $4 or $5 million in a mutual fund, you can probably afford a nursing home stay, right? But if you're 60 years old and you don't have $1 million cash or more that you can get your hands on in investments, then you need to look into long-term care insurance. Now, a bunch of you in here are not 60 years old. How many of you have parents that are 60 years old or older? That's like almost everybody here, right? So the deal is this. Let me tell you, statistics are, and financial planning statistics are telling us, that the largest expense facing the baby boomer and the baby buster is not their kids' college fund, it's their parents' elder care. You've got to get ready for that. And so you've got to have the talk with mom and dad. Yeah, the nursing home talk. The long-term care insurance talk. Because if not, when they're ill and you feel this heart tug to take care of them and they wouldn't discuss their money, and then you find out they don't have any, then you are faced with the burden of putting them in a welfare nursing home, a Medicaid nursing home, or with coming out of pocket with that. So you've got to have the talk. And I'll just tell you up front, having the talk with mom and dad is not an easy thing to do. Elder care is a problem. It's a hard discussion to have, because what you get into is the powdered butt syndrome. You see, once someone has powdered your butt, they really don't want your advice. And so when you sit down with mom and dad, it's hard for them to accept that from you. So you need to get armed with some statistics and some things. You could show them, for instance, that 60% of the people over 65 will take on some kind of long-term care in their life, and 20% of them will need 5 years or more. Well, I'll just move all the assets out of mom and dad's name so that they can get Medicaid. We'll hide their assets. It's not fair. They worked all their lives. It's not fair for the nursing home to get their money. How many of you have heard that one before? Okay. Well, that's kind of like saying, why don't I quit my job so I can get welfare? Because Medicaid nursing home is for the indigent. It's for people who don't have money. And the loopholes have been stopped up. The federal government, by federal law, can look back 36 months in some cases, as much as 60 months, 5 years, and undo any asset transfers in order to keep you from taking advantage of welfare nursing home. So if you think you're going to move all of mom and dad's assets out of their name into your name so that they can get free government nursing home, you're wrong. They'll come back and undo the whole thing, and guess what? Doing that with that intent is now a criminal offense. Okay? So be very, very careful with these people who push that out. That's federal law. This is not a game, okay? Now, your spouse, let's say that your parents are already facing that and they didn't have long-term care. Here are the rules for Medicaid. The spouse can keep the house, the car, and up to $79,000 cash. Everything else has to go through towards nursing home care, and when everything else is gone down to that level, then the government will step in and let them go into welfare Medicaid nursing home. And that's what a Medicaid nursing home is. It is a welfare institution. Okay? Some of you have acted like it was some kind of socialistic government program. It is not. That is not how it was designed. It is not the mission statement and the intent of the program. And the level of care there is not something most of you would want your parents in. Now, you people in Medicaid nursing homes are just offended. Get over it. I've looked at both. One's nicer than the other. Okay? That's the deal. And where do you want your parents? Now, I'll tell you, I sat with a 67-year-old friend of mine not long ago. He was asking me about this question, more than just a little bullheaded, to tell you the truth, and I went over it with him in detail. I said, you've got to have long-term care insurance. It's going to eat you alive. His 62-year-old wife was recently, because he didn't go get long-term care like I told him to, his 62-year-old wife was just diagnosed with Alzheimer's. Now, do you understand that the average Alzheimer patient at 62 lives 25 years out of their mind? Do you understand this was an $800,000 mistake? Because on average, that's what he's going to put out in nursing home or in-home care to take care of his wife. So even if he had $1 million net worth, a lousy insurance premium on that long-term care, if he had taken my advice, would have saved his net worth. So you have absolutely got to talk to your parents, or if you're 60 years old or approaching it, start looking into long-term care insurance. It's vital. Life insurance. Boy, this is a biggie, isn't it? Oh, we love life insurance. It's even got the wrong name, doesn't it? It's not really life insurance. You're not insuring your life, you're insuring your death. It's to replace lost income due to death. So it's really death insurance. And the bad thing about life insurance is it violates what we teach you in the buyer beware lesson. Never buy something you don't understand. I can tell you that most people have no idea what kind of life insurance they own. I'll ask them, I'll say, what kind of life insurance have you got? State Farm. Don't have a clue. Do not understand how it works. Only listen to the guy or the gal because they had this great pitch and went in and did it. Well, I'll tell you what. We are absolutely going to dissect this grotesque industry right here and show you how this stuff exactly works and what you need to do without question. There are basically two types of life insurance. They fall under two categories. Number one is term insurance. Term insurance is normally for a specified term, thus its name. If it's annual renewable term, it's 1 year is the term. And then it goes up based on your age. If it's 5-year term, it goes for 5 years, and it goes up based on how old you are at the end of 5 years. If it's 20-year level term, it runs 20 years. The second type is cash value insurance, which is much more expensive in order to fund a savings plan built inside of the insurance policy. Now, most policies that are sold in North America are cash value insurance policies. Somewhere around 75% of the policies sold this year will be cash value policies. It is what the industry pushes, which should give us a clue right there when we check the size of their building. okay, as compared with the size of our homes. Something's up here, right? So we need to think through what they are pushing automatically makes me go, ooh, I want to look at this, okay? So cash value insurance are what is pushed, it is what is sold, and generally, when you talk to your life insurance agent, the way they'll say is, term is kind of like renting, cash value insurance is kind of like buying and owning. Have you heard that one? Oh, yeah, two or three groans in the back. Okay, the most common myth is that the need for life insurance is a permanent situation and is ever-growing. The only ever-growing permanent situation is your agent's need for commissions. Okay? Nothing is permanent about insurance. You only need it when you need it. 20 years from today, with the children grown and gone, you're debt-free, including that 15-year mortgage, you have investments that have grown to a substantial amount, you have become self-insured. So you do not have a permanent need for insurance. Let's think through this for a second, okay? Let's talk to this couple right here. Have you guys got kids? Okay, let's pretend with these guys for just a second. Got, how old are your children?
Daughter's six and our boy's three.
Daughter's six and their boy is three. Okay? Now, how old are you guys? Do you mind? Just you. We don't want to talk about her.
31.
31 years old. Okay, perfect. All right? We've got a 31-year-old with a couple of little kids. All right, 20 years from today, they're going to do what we teach, aren't you? Say yes, okay? So you're going to be out of debt, no more than a 15-year mortgage, so your house is even paid for, right? No debt 20 years from today. Could we all believe that that could happen? Okay? They're 51 years old at that point, right? Now, they've got no debt. Now, they've got a 6-year-old and a 3-year-old. Okay, so we've got a 26-year-old and a 23-year-old. Around my house, those kids are gone. Is that right? So she doesn't have kids to take care of. She doesn't have any debt. Now, also, we're going to go through the investment lesson and the retirement lesson, and we're going to go to baby step four, where we put 15% of our income into retirement, aren't we? That's baby step four as we go along. And we're going to start saving in good mutual funds. They start doing that. On average, 20 years from today, they'll have somewhere in the neighborhood of $500,000 to $1 million in mutual funds. Now, let me check with you just a second. If you're 51 years old, the kids are grown and gone. You got no debt and $700,000 in the bank. If he drops over, you think you could struggle through? You see what I'm saying? That's called financial planning. They have become self-insured. Their need for life insurance has gone away. Because what she needs right now as a young mom with these kids is to replace his income because they are dependent on that. What he needs is to replace her income or the things she does as a full-time mom with these little kids and these debts still there. So right now they have a tremendous need for insurance. But if they got out of debt, the kids are gone, and they had a big nest egg, they don't have as much need or no need for insurance. Does that make sense? So there is no permanent need for insurance. That is a lie that has been told us, much like the bankers have told us about debt. This is what the life insurance agents have told us. Well, you need it for estate planning. Oh, please, now we're getting desperate, okay? By the way, in the year 2010, do you understand there is no estate planning needed anymore, okay? Or very, very little. So let's get over this thing of trying to figure out a way to keep your life insurance agent in business and quit trying to play sophisticated games with life insurance. You're going to get burned. Let me show you what I'm talking about. This is not a game, okay? Let's look for a second at Joe and Susie. Joe is much like this couple out here. He is 30 years old. Joe makes an average household income. The average household income is $40,000 a year in North America right now. Joe makes the money, and Susie, in our example, is a full-time homemaker. They have a 6-year-old, and we'll just leave it with you guys, a 3-year-old, okay? Just like them. Much like this couple sitting out here. Now, what would normally be sold to Joe is a thing called cash value insurance. Now, we have done the research in our firm in the last several weeks. We pulled 5 of the top whole life companies, asked them to give us their best presentation on what they had. What Joe at 30 years old can buy, this gentleman happens to be 31, he's almost a perfect example, okay? What he can buy for $100 a month is $125,000 of cash value insurance. And in that, it builds up a savings program inside called cash value. And Joe can use this not only for life insurance, but for a retirement plan as well, which doesn't sound too bad on the surface. And we all generally look at that and go, well, okay, let's do that, don't we? And a bunch of us have bought cash value insurance based on that. And if we look at the numbers, these are the exact averages of those five top companies that we did the research on. At 30 years old, of course, it starts with zero. His cash value buildup, his investment, after paying on that, at 40 years old is $8,000. And then at 50 years old, it's $22,000. At 60 years old, he'll have $41,000 for retirement. And all during that time, he's had $125,000 worth of insurance, all for $100 a month. Sounds pretty good until I look at it a little more carefully. I pulled another analysis with the top term insurance companies and asked for the best bid on a 20-year level term, the best one I could get on a healthy, non-smoking premium. So these are the best rates. Might not be fair for some of you, but for example purposes, the best rates a 30-year-old can get on $125,000 worth of insurance. You know what I found? I found that it didn't cost $100 a month to get that guy $125,000 of insurance. It cost $7 a month. And so what did I do with the other $93, do you suspect? I put it in a good Roth IRA where it went tax-free growth, didn't I? In a decent mutual fund, which have averaged 12%, as we will teach you in the investment lesson. Well, when I did that, here's what I got. $125,000 worth of insurance, and instead of at 60 years old, $41,000, he'll have $327,000. But you know what the problem with that is? That's not a good comparison for several reasons. One is, it's tough to get a $7 a month premium written by anybody. Okay? They just don't want to fool with $100 a year worth of premium. Okay? The second problem with that is, Joe doesn't have enough insurance. If something happens to Joe, he makes $40,000 a year. Susie has $125,000 to invest. If she invests $125,000, let's make the math easy, and she makes 10% on that, what's 10% of $125,000? So she's got to cut her income from $40,000 to $12,000 and raise these two kids, or she's got to eat up the principal. This is not right, is it? So I'm not going to do that. I'm not even going to compare apples to apples with these bozos. We're going to do the right thing. What you ought to do is about 10 times your income. Let's pretend this gentleman, or Joe, makes $40,000 a year, and he gets $400,000 of term life insurance. Then, let me ask you, if something happens to him, you take $400,000 and invest it at 10%. If he makes $40,000, at 10% on $40,000, what would her income be? $40,000. We've just replaced you. Oops. Okay? So you don't want to get too much. You have to sleep with one eye open, okay? But do you see how that works? Now, that's a rough and dirty, but it's a pretty close. You see what we're trying to do? Without eating up the nest egg, we want the income off of that nest egg to take care of that wife and kids or that husband and kids, depending on whose income we're trying to replace. So I said, let's look at a third thing. Let's buy the right amount of insurance, $400,000 on him instead of $125,000. Then his wife and kids are taken care of. You know what that cost? $20 a month. You know what I did with the other $80? Invested it in a good mutual fund. Now, I didn't have $327,000 at 60. I had $279,000 at 60. Are you beginning to get the idea that maybe cash value insurance is not a good buy? Well, let me just totally mess up cash value insurance for you then. Okay, let me tell you what happens with whole life. If Joe takes out that $125,000 policy and he goes along there till age 50, finally by paying what we have established is $93 a month too much every month. Finally, with $93 all those years too much, he finally gets up to $22,000 in there. See it at 60 years old? You see it? He dies. You know what happens? What do they pay her? $125. What happened to his $22,000 that he put an extra $93 in a month for all those years? They keep it. They keep it. It's part of the cost of the insurance is how they explain that. What I call that is a ripoff. This is one of the worst financial products in the marketplace today. Consumer Reports, Smart Money Magazine, Consumer Federation of America, Money Magazine, Fortune Magazine have all done articles in recent months saying no one with any level of financial sophistication any longer buys any kind of cash value insurance because of this problem. Now, there's two or three newer models than the old whole life. What we compared this to was the old whole life. The two or three newer models are things like, the first one was the universal life plan. How many of you have heard of that? Okay? Universal life. That's where the cash value builds up a little better than this. Let me tell you, the average on that growth is 2.6%, according to a study done by the Consumer Federation of America. The average whole life policy grows at 2.6%. So you have a lousy long-term savings plan, would you agree? And when you die, they keep your money. That's lousy. The universal life policy grows a little better. It has an effective yield. They quote you 9 to 12. But the effective yield on the actual stuff that's in the marketplace, done by independent consumer groups, people like Consumer Reports, Consumer Federation of America, these kinds of people, find the average universal life to be about 4.2%. Then there's a new product that came out called variable life insurance a few years ago. Variable life insurance is a mutual fund inside of there. So that mutual fund, they'll show you that mutual fund has averaged 12 or 14%, and it has. Problem is, it's inside the insurance company, which means it has to walk down the hallway. And all these guys keep grabbing at your back pocket as you walk along. They're called fees. Fee, 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 fee. You'd think it was a French poodle. Fee, 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 fee. It's bad news. And what ends up happening in this sophisticated variable universal life policies, these VULs, again, the same study by Consumer Federation of America, shows that the VULs, while the mutual fund is making 12 to 14, the net effective yield into your pocket is somewhere around 7.4%. So again, if we had mapped it out here, it would be between the purple and the red, but it still wouldn't hold up with the red. You're always better off to buy your insurance over here, just a real clean, crisp deal, the best price on a 20-year level term you can get out there. Do your investing over here. If you let your investments get inside that insurance company, you are not going to win. I don't sell any of this. I don't care what you do. And I know your brother-in-law sold you this garbage, okay? Or your friend from college. That's how it's always done, isn't it? Okay? I know who did it. So it's a relationship game, which makes it harder for you to undo it. And let me tell you, they're not evil, bad people, these insurance people. They spend 85% of their time in class learning how to sell, 15% how it works. It's a marketing thing. Okay? The evil people are on up in the company that understand what they're doing to the consumer. This is a ripoff. It is a bad deal, and you shouldn't do it. I do not own it. I own 20-year level term insurance on me and on Sharon. Now, should a full-time mommy have an insurance policy? You betcha. Sharon's got these three kids we're raising. Something happens to her, man, I need to hire Mary Poppins, complete with a parrot head umbrella, right? You know? And so we've got $400,000 on the princess, you know, on Sharon. So if something happens to her, I invest that. I've got a $40,000 a year income off of that to try to replace a little bit of what she does. We couldn't even get close for that, probably. But it begins to get... A full-time mom brings economic value to that household. Keep that in mind. Try replacing what she does. It would be really, really tough. So always buy term insurance. Never buy cash value insurance as an investment. Why? Returns are historically low. And when you die with cash value, the insurance company keeps the cash value, and the fees deducted from your returns are very, very high. Kiplinger's Personal Finance Magazine and Adrian Berg's newsletter agrees with me. Fortune Magazine, Money Magazine, Smart Magazine, Smart Money Magazine, and so on, all have done articles recently that agree with this concept. The only people telling you otherwise are insurance people, and they can be very convincing, can't they? Do you feel equipped to make this decision on your own at this point? Okay. Let me give you a hint, one last hint. There's no sense trying to argue with someone who's already made up their mind. So don't try to convince your insurance agent that they're wrong. Just fire them. Okay? Those convinced against their will are of the same opinion still. If they became convinced of what you and I just understood, they would have to do something else for a living. So it's you're trying to get them to quit their job, not just not sell you an insurance policy. So don't try to debate and argue with them. There's no point in it. Just do the right thing for you, and if they'll understand it some years later when they're in another business, okay? Because 80% of the life insurance agents are gone from the business in 8 months, all right? So just give them time. They'll be doing something else. Now, what to buy? Well, you buy low-cost level term. Don't forget the spouse, even the spouse that doesn't have a position outside the home. Stay away from fancy options. I want accidental death. I get twice as much if I die by accident. Listen, you're not double dead if you die by accident. She needs just as much to take care of those kids if he has a heart attack as if he gets hit by a car. It doesn't change the situation at all, does it? Doesn't matter how he dies. Well, he's more likely to die by accident. Listen, insurance companies, one thing they're not is stupid, okay? The actual probability of that event happening is factored into the cost. If it's a low cost, it's because there's a low probability of that actually happening in the statistical evidence they have called actuarial tables. Okay, these people aren't stupid. Grow up. Look at the size of their building. You're not going to, ooh, I ripped them off. It's not going to happen, okay? Never buy burial insurance for children. A lot of people buy cash value insurance as an investment for college. Lousy plan. Or I'm going to buy, never buy, except enough to do burial on a child. I'm sorry. Now here's the deal. Think about this for a second. Your child does not create an income, but if something happens to them, God forbid, you have to take care of that. So $10,000 or $15,000 as a rider on your term policy is plenty to carry on your children. For your college funding, we're going to deal with that over here somewhere later in another lesson on investing and teaching you to invest long term at that point. Now, how much insurance do you need? Let's look at that for a second. We said about 10 times your income as an example, because we want to replace his income if something happens to him. So if he makes $40,000 a year, we want to have about $400,000. And look at these rates. This is kind of amazing. If we took a 30-year-old as an example and wanted to put a $500,000 policy on him or her, and then let's put a $300,000 policy on the other spouse, here's how the numbers would shake out. Somewhere around $480 a year. That's how you can use that particular sheet to calculate yours. Okay, so look at your age or somewhere in there, extrapolate a little bit, and you can figure out about what yours would cost. But see, about $40 a month will give that family a ton of life insurance. So let me just tell you, it's plain irresponsible. It's plain irresponsible with rates that cheap to be walking around without life insurance on you. Well, I don't know if I can get insurance. I have this, this, and this. Well, then go ask. What are they going to do? Say no. That's the worst thing can happen, right? You're walking around without coverage because you thought, well, quit thinking. Go find out. It doesn't cost anything to ask. Worst thing can happen is they'll turn you down. Ooh, 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 okay? You didn't have any before you asked, so what's the big deal? And some of you will find out that smoking costs twice as much. So those little packs of cigarettes, just every time you light one of them up, it's a big deal in the life insurance world. You can take all those rates on that page and double them at least for smokers, probably a little more than double. So that's the drill. But just a few dollars a month can absolutely change your family's life. Insurances to avoid? Well, we avoid credit life insurance and credit disability insurance. How many times do you go to get a loan of some kind or a mortgage and they offer you credit life? It pays off the loan if you die. Did you know that if you calculate that stuff based on these term insurance rates we were just looking at, that it's 90 to 200 times more expensive? Isn't that amazing? In other words, what you could cover about a $10,000 debt for, you could buy about $300,000 or $400,000 worth of term insurance for. Never buy credit life insurance. Anytime a lender tries to sell you insurance, you're going to find you are about to be ripped off. One time I had a lender approve a loan subject to me buying term insurance from them to cover the loan. It was a $1 million line of credit back in the days we were doing the big real estate deals. And I priced that and I found it for a fourth of that in the open market, and I found out a new law that day. A lender cannot require, with the exception of auto has a strong lobby, the only one, but by law, the rest of them, a lender cannot require that you take out an insurance policy from them. They can require you take out an insurance policy to cover them in the event of your death, but they can't require you buy it from them. So never buy credit life. It is very, very, very expensive. But since we don't borrow money, I don't think that's a big deal. Kind of like number two, credit card protection. Now that's what I want to do, is protect my plastic. I mean, after all, Dave Ramsey's running around. We might want to protect it, right? It could happen, you know? Another one not to buy is cancer insurance. And a lot of you have been sold and bought cancer insurance. Well, why didn't you buy heart attack insurance? Why didn't you buy stroke insurance? Because there's nowhere near the fear with those things there is cancer. Cancer scares everybody to death. Because we all know someone who's had a horrible thing go on with cancer. It scares people to death. Your hospitalization, your major medical covers cancer, does it not? Yes or no?
Yes.
Okay. If it covers cancer, why do you need another policy? Because it was only $2 a month, Dave, and I was scared. And we'll put the $2 a month in your kid's college fund, okay? Let's stop getting ripped off a penny or two at a time. That's $24 a year. Over time, it adds up, okay? So if you've got cancer insurance, my suggestion is cancel it. I don't carry cancer insurance. Now all the cancer insurance people are mad at me. I'll just have to stay up nights and worry. The next one is accidental death insurance. We talked about that a minute ago. You're not double dead if you die by accident. You need the right amount of life insurance no matter how you die. Again, this is a gimmick type policy. Stay away from that. Insurance with a cash value investment or a refund. Now, that's one you see. Dave, if I don't use it, they give me all my premiums back. Have you seen that one? On the different kinds of policies, sometimes the nursing home policy, the long-term care policy is that way. If you don't use it, they'll give you all your premiums back. Honey, if you had invested that, you'd have had tens of thousands of dollars plus all your premiums back. Okay? If you take the little extra they charge you for that refund feature and invest it, you'll get your refund back in your investment account whether or not you use the insurance. Okay? That's exactly how they did it. They took that extra $15 or $25 a month, invested it themselves, and then if you don't use the policy, they give you your money back. It wasn't a big deal, and they still made a profit. Okay? If you do use the policy, then they keep your money. If you just put that same amount in there, run the math on this. You got to kind of stop and think through these things. Prepaid burial policies. You know, I had a guy 40 years old call up a while back and said, Dave, I took care of my burial stuff. My mama died, and I got all emotional, and I made bad decisions, and I don't want my family to do that. So I've already taken care of my burial stuff. He's 40 years old. I said, what'd that cost? $3,000. I said, 40 years old, $3,000. That's interesting. I said, let's just stick this in the calculator for a second. And I put it in my little financial calculator at a mutual fund. Because, you know, the average 40-year-old in North America today with increasing lifespan, the statistical average is he's going to live to be 80. So he's got 40 years on average. Now, he might die tomorrow. He might die at 92. But on average, 80 is what a 40-year-old is going to live to be. Now, if I took that $3,000 and invested it from 40 to 80, he'd have $355,000. I suspect that would bury him. Who is this, King Tut? Prepaid burial is where you park your money with a funeral home and get no return on investment except the inflation rate of those items, which is about 3 or 4%. You're much better off to invest it and let your relatives pay the bill. If you want to prearrange your funeral and know what is, you know, go ahead and pick everything out, that takes the emotional thing off your family. That's fine. You know, I want the Chevrolet casket, you know, and you get it all picked out, right? That's okay. Go ahead and do that. But don't be paying for this stuff until you have to, because basically what you're doing is investing at an inflation rate that is very low. This is not King Tut. Don't prepay your burial. Prepaid burial policies don't make sense. Don't do mortgage life insurance. Mortgage life insurance is decreasing term. Decreasing term insurance is where the face amount decreases. Premiums stay the same and the face amount decreases. There's not many of those decreasing term policies sold anymore, but that's all it is. It's term insurance, pays off your mortgage. As the mortgage goes down, your coverage goes down because all it does is pay off the mortgage, right? Did you know if you took the same premium, bought term insurance, you could buy four times more in regular life insurance that's level. And that would easily pay off your mortgage. But they put the word mortgage in front of it, and we got to have the house paid off. This is an emotional thing at death, right? I know mama's taken care of, you know? And so we got gimmicked with the word mortgage in front of it, and we paid four to five times too much for basic decreasing term insurance because we got gimmicked into an emotional issue over the mortgage. So just take the same money, go buy a big policy, put a note on the front of it, say, babe, pay the house off. And that's it, right? You see what I'm doing? That's all you got to do, okay? The other thing you don't want to do is you don't want to do any kind of duplicate coverage. If you have two health insurance policies, let me tell you what will happen. You won't make money because they're not allowed to pay you. They have to only pay the medical bill. What will end up happening where you thought you were double covering, you will end up with no coverage. Because neither one of them will pay the medical bill because they fight over who is the primary coverage company and nobody ends up paying it. And then you get baked. So the deal with insurance is you've got to avoid the traps. You avoid those with knowledge. Now, we went through this pretty quick, but I'm telling you, in this lesson, the meat is really thick here. There is some filet mignon, there is some prime rib in here. There's a lot to chew on, isn't there? So go back through this lesson ever so often. At different times in your life, different job situations, you need to remember this insurance. The information is in this lesson. You've got the audio cassette to go back over and over and over again inside your book, and you've also got the lesson to review. Make sure you don't let them take your dollars. The insurance companies are not evil, they're just greedy. Okay? And so you've got to watch them. You have to be an aware, informed consumer. It's the scariest thing that could ever happen to an insurance agent. I'm telling you right now, I gave you enough information in this one class to 15 or 20 times pay back easy what little you paid to go through the whole 13 sessions. You got some meat and potatoes tonight, didn't you? Yeah. Thanks.
These insurance guys are great buddies. They can be some of the best friends that you ever had. I've never seen someone so friendly.
They were selling investments, and so I bought into the investments, and they said, okay, part of the thing, you got to have investments, you got to have insurance and savings, and they're like, you got to have all this to go together.
The only thing cash value is good for is the guy that's selling it to you.
That extra money you were paying for the insurance company is going into your investment, and it's going to grow rapidly.
Yeah.
So that's good.
I always thought everybody needed a burial policy, but now I know I would never have a burial policy, you know, because you're going to be covered by your, if you've got good term life insurance, you're going to be covered by that.
I've got to get insurance because we can save and save, but until I get there, I'd like to have something that's going to help my family in the event that I'm gone.
I think about the long-term insurance for my mother, mostly, and your mother, because she's getting a vet
age. Long-term disability, and also for myself, that I don't have.
The idea of being able to pay for insurance for a nursing home. My parents, that's going to be a hard conversation that I'm going to have with them, but I've got to have that conversation with them because they haven't been planning for their retirement like they should.
Credit cards reek.